Right, well, we come to the last in our series, current series, looking at the life of Jesus under the title, Who Do You Say I Am? For those of you who've been part of this journey, you'll know we've been following the book, The Jesus I Never Knew, by Philip Yancey. If you haven't finished it, you've got the summer to catch up. Small groups, I think, are a little bit behind, but they'll kind of catch up at some point. I'm sure something will happen around that. But that's the kind of material for this kind of term, and we finish today. It's also the last of our two services at the moment. So there's a 5 o'clock service this afternoon. Next week, it's just the morning service at 10:30. So if you're thinking next week you're going to come to the 5 o'clock, you'll be disappointed because no one will be here. And over the summer and then into the autumn, we'll be sticking to that one service. We're going to discuss that at the September church meeting as to what we do next with that. So please keep talking to us if you've got ideas and thoughts, if God's sharing things with you. Share that with us as elders, please, if you can. Last week, we focused on the first part of this material, the difference Jesus makes. And we started to look at some of the I am sayings of John's gospel. We didn't do them in detail. We just kind of literally sort of skimmed them just to think about the difference that Jesus makes in our lives. And we saw that we have, as people, we have salvation through Jesus' sacrifice. Jesus said, I am the gate. It's through me that you come into the relationship with the Father. And because I am the good shepherd, I lay my life down for my sheep. We have, as men and women, this incredible opportunity to come into this relationship, to know God personally through the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. We have a relationship with him. Jesus said, I am the bread of life. Come to me. Come to me and you will not hunger or thirst. He doesn't say go do stuff. He says just come to me. Come and have a relationship with me. And in that relationship you will experience all of this. It's about being and not doing. We found that he was light and dark. I am the light of the world. I am the one who will show you the way. I will give you purpose and meaning in life. I will reveal to you what life is all about. A step at a time. I will reveal to you light in the darkness. And we finish with those verses from John 10 where Jesus, in the context of saying, I am the good shepherd, says, I have come that you might have life and have it in all its fullness. Abundant life, life to overflowing. And all that is possible because Jesus says, before Abraham was, I am. He is divine. He is human. He is the Son of God and the Son of Man. He is both man and God. Before Abraham was born, I am. We continue our studies, therefore, today, looking at some of the other sayings, I am sayings of John's Gospel. And again, we're going to do the same thing. We're going to sort of skim through them, really. We're not going to be able to do them in any detail. So I encourage you to kind of reflect further on them. This material won't be in the stuff you look at small groups. It complements it. Just encourage you to reflect on it. The difference that Jesus makes to our lives. The next statement that Jesus says in John chapter 11, I am the resurrection and the life. From verse 17 of John chapter 11, this is how John records this particular statement. On his arrival, Jesus found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Now Bethany was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem, and many Jews had come to Martha and Mary to comfort them in the loss of their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed at home. Lord, Martha said to Jesus, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask. Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. Martha answered, I know he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day. Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this? Yes, Lord, she replied. I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, who is to come into the world. I am the resurrection and the life. What difference does Jesus make? To those who were there, Martha and Mary. Didn't really make much difference at all, because poor old Lazarus, he'd died. Martha said, if he'd been here, Jesus, he wouldn't have died. All those who'd come from Jerusalem to support Martha and Mary, they're going, well, thanks, Jesus. If he'd been here, this wouldn't have happened. It seems that Jesus' absence has caused this, or has not stopped his death. What difference does Jesus make? Jesus, in John chapter 10, spoke about abundant life, spoke about life in all its fullness. And here Jesus points out that abundant life, that life in all its fullness, is not just about this life on this planet, it's about eternity too. You know, we live in a world that is bereft of hope. And if there is nothing beyond this life, if these 3 score years and 10, or 4 score years and 10, is more likely now, is anything to go by, if it's all that is, then what is the point? Okay, it's okay if you've got some money, and you've got a family, and you've got success in your work, and you can kind of enjoy some of the sort of material trappings and enjoy life on this planet. You haven't got to worry about money. Okay. Doesn't really satisfy you, but okay, you can get by if that's all it is. But what about when things go wrong? What about when you don't have money? What about when you don't have family, when you don't have health, when you don't have all those things? If this world is all it is, how do you cope with that? Is it any wonder that the suicide rates in our country are going through the roof? Because we take eternity out of the equation, and all we're left with is this earth and this life. Jesus says eternity is a reality. And as we follow him, we have this incredible promise that we will not experience death. We will fall asleep, as Paul records it in 1 Corinthians 15. For those who follow Jesus, for those who believe in Jesus, he says, we will just fall asleep. We won't experience that death. Now, obviously, we know we experience death, but for us, it's like falling asleep and waking up with God in his presence. What a beautiful way of understanding death for those of us who are Christians. If we're not a Christian, what hope is there for us? Jesus says, I am the resurrection and the life. Abundant life, both here in the present, but also in the future and in eternity. See, what Jesus is offering here is much more than just life here on this earth. And it's even much more than life in eternity too. For those of us who believe in Jesus, he offers us comfort and strength in the face of death. We know that our brothers and sisters, those who have gone before, have fallen asleep and have woken up in his presence. We know that one day we will see them again. We know that for those of us who trust and know Jesus ourselves, we will have that experience too, that we will one day fall asleep and wake up in his presence. But for all of us, Christian and non-Christian, there is the promise of hope. Now, for the non-Christian, that promise has to be realized, it has to be entered into, it has to be experienced and received. But there is this promise that there is something to live for, there is purpose to life, there is meaning for life. Why? Because there is eternity. It is not just about these years on this planet. There is much more to come. This is just the foretaste, the prelude. 90 years on this earth is like a blink of an eye in terms of eternity. So what happens on this planet, what happens in your life, what happens to you today and tomorrow matters. Why? Because there is eternity. Jesus says, I am the resurrection and the life. The difference Jesus makes to us is there is hope for us because we put our trust in Jesus and we know we will be with him. We know that everything that matters, everything that happens on this earth, and on this planet, matters to Jesus because we will be with him one day. What a hope we have. As I said last Sunday morning, when you take Jesus out of the equation, what are you left with? What are you left with? Hopelessness. Jesus says, no, I am the resurrection and the life. There is hope. There is life beyond this earth. And if you trust me and know me, that will be your experience. Jesus moves on then to our next statement. These words are most often read at funerals. John chapter 14. Do not let your hearts be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. My Father's house has many rooms. If it were not so, would I have told you that I'm going to prepare a place for you? And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come back and take you to be with me, that you also may be where I am. You know the way to the place where I'm going. Thomas said to him, Lord, we don't know where you're going, so how can we know the way? Jesus answered, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. If you really know me, you will know my Father as well. From now on, you do know him and have seen him. In this one statement, Jesus brings together all of the other statements that we've been looking at. Jesus said, I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will not go hungry. It's about that relationship with God through Jesus. And in that place, we do not experience hunger. We have that relationship. It's about being and not doing. And Jesus here says, no one comes to the Father except through me. Jesus is the way to the Father. Again, it's about that relationship with him, not about what we do. Jesus says, I am the light of the world. Gives purpose and meaning to life. Reveals the way for us. Jesus says, I am the way. Jesus has said, before Abraham was born, I am. He is divine. Here he says, God is my Father. If you've seen him, if you've seen me, you've seen him. If you've clapped eyes on me, Jesus says, you've clapped eyes on the Father. Wow. Jesus spoke about being the good shepherd and the gates, the one through whom we enter into this relationship, the one through who lays down his life for his sheep. Jesus reiterates that. He says, I am the way. I lay my life down. It's only through me that you can come to the Father. There is no other gate. There is no other door. There is no other way. I am the way. Jesus, as he just said, has said, I am the resurrection and the life. Here he says, I am the life. Do you see that in this one statement, all of those others are kind of captured? We're reminded that Jesus makes a difference to our lives as the one who brings us into relationship with the Father. The one who reveals himself to us. The one who provides us hope and a future, who gives us meaning and purpose in life. And he says to us, I am the truth. And I want to take a moment just to focus on that statement, just for a moment, if that's possible with you. This is really important for us to grasp this, because it so often leads and has led many astray. See, you and I, we are made in the image of God. And in each and every one of us, there is something of the image of God in us. Every human being carries that image. God has placed in every human being something of himself. But it is just an image. It is just a partial picture. It is not the full thing. That means that in every human being there are elements of truth. And so when we read literature, We look at art. We look at man-made objects. We talk to people. We find in those things elements of truth. In all world faith, there are elements of truth because we are all made in the image of God. And so we bring some of ourselves, some of God's image into all of those things. Now the problem is, some people then say, well, we need to get all those bits together to get the real picture of the truth. And that was my uncle's problem. I talked about my uncle last Sunday. So the services that he led in church, he would have readings from texts that were not the Bible to bring those elements of truth into that experience. He would say that there were elements that this truth, in order to learn the truth and experience the truth, we need all these other bits to play and be at work and play in our lives. We need to learn from them. The trouble is they are just bits of, elements of, images of. Jesus says, I am the truth. Do we need anything else? No, we don't. All of these other bits of truth in me, in you, in creation, probably in literature, in art, in philosophy, and all those other things, those little bits of truth that are out there, they're partial. They are not the complete picture. There is only one, and that is Jesus. The important thing is we come to Jesus and we find the truth, which is carried in many of us in different ways, little bits. And so we can speak into each other's lives truth. Because God gives us truth to speak into each other's lives. Do I have the truth? No, I do not. Am I the truth? No, I'm not. Can I speak bits of the truth? Yes, I can. Do we need all of those to work together in order to learn the truth? No, we don't. We come to Jesus, who is the truth. He is complete. There is nothing partial, nothing lacking in Jesus. We don't need anything else. We don't need to add to Jesus. He is complete and whole and unified. There is nothing lacking in that. But we find reflections of that truth, bits of that truth in the world, which point us to the truth rather than driving us to try and gather more of the truth together. But so many people in the world, they run around and they live their lives trying to get the bits of together, to make the truth, to put it together in some way. And they miss this statement that says Jesus is the truth. You need nothing else than Jesus. His word is all we need. Everything about his word is complete, it is united. There is nothing to be added to his word. Nothing to be added to Jesus. Jesus is the truth. What difference does he make to our lives? Well, he gives us everything that we need. There is nothing that we can find elsewhere that would add to and improve on Jesus, despite what the world would say. We look to Jesus, who is the truth, full and complete. Moving on. The penultimate I am saying brings us full circle. Jesus says, I am the vine. Jesus says, I am the true vine. And my Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes so that it will be even more fruitful. You are already clean because of the word I have spoken to you. Remain in me, as I also remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. I am the vine. You are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. Our first statement, which Jesus said, I am the bread of life. He says it's about what we do. It's not about what we do, it's about who we are, about that relationship, about being in relationship with God. And Jesus brings us full circle now with this last penultimate statement. He says, I am the vine. He says, it's about remaining in me. Remaining in me. What's important in our journey is remaining in him. This text also reminds us what our purpose is. What is your purpose as a human being? What is your purpose as a follower of Jesus? Well, Jesus very helpfully spells it out for us. In verse 8 he says, this is to my Father's glory, that you bear much fruit. And that fruit is what? Showing yourselves to be my disciples. The first fruit that we have is to be disciples of Jesus. And what does that mean? Jesus says, as the Father's loved me, so have I loved you. Now remain in my love. If you keep my commands, you will remain in my love. So being a disciple of Jesus is about obeying his commands. This is what it means to follow Jesus. This is what it means to, this is what our purpose is all about. Our purpose is, as followers of Jesus, to bear fruit. And that is the fruit. There's a very stark warning in that text, isn't there? Did you pick that up? If you do not bear fruit, what is going to happen? Jesus says, you'll be cut off and thrown away. If you do not bear fruit, you'll be cut off and thrown away. The challenge there for all of us is, are we bearing fruit? And how do we bear fruit? We bear fruit by remaining in Jesus. It's not about doing, it's about being. As we remain in Jesus, the fruit comes. And don't think that just following Jesus and bearing fruit means you're not going to have, you're going to have it easy. Because Jesus, notice that, what he says? If you bear fruit, what's going to happen to you? You're going to be pruned. And if a fruit tree could tell you anything, it would say that being pruned is painful. If you bear fruit, you will be pruned. There will come times of pain where things are cut off, where we have to be reduced in order to grow again. That is part of what happens in creation and in our walk with Jesus. But we are called to remain in him, and as we remain in him, as we are focused on being in him, we will bear fruit. Matthew 28, Jesus says, go make disciples. Disciples is a command of Jesus. So it's disciples making disciples, making disciples, making disciples. That's the process. That's what we're about. That is what bearing fruit means, folks. It's a command of Jesus to go and make disciples. Are you bearing fruit? Are you making disciples? If not, what are we going to do about that? How do we make disciples? How do we do that, invest in that process? I was recently chatting to a friend of mine. And we were talking about the challenge of ministry. We were talking about our respective churches and the challenges that we were experiencing. And he came back to me and said to me, you know, the important thing in all of this, he said, is how is your soul? How is your walk with Jesus? Yes, ministry can be tough. Yes, there can be a load of rubbish going on in your church. But where are you in your walk with Jesus? Whose responsibility is it that I remain in Jesus? Whose responsibility is it that I remain in Jesus? And then as I remain in Jesus, the promise is that I will bear fruit. It is my responsibility. It's not the pastor's responsibility. It is not the church's responsibility. It is not your small group leader's responsibility that you remain in Jesus. It is your responsibility. And as Christians, we need to accept that responsibility, to recognize it is my responsibility that I remain in Jesus. I need my brothers and sisters to help me. I need them to hold me to account. But it is my responsibility to say, I want to remain in Jesus. How is my soul? How am I doing with Jesus? I can't blame anybody else. I can make excuses for sure. And we often do, don't we? I often do. But it is my responsibility that I remain in Jesus. And as I remain in Jesus, I will bear fruit. And that fruit will then bear fruit because disciples make disciples make disciples. You have a responsibility. And that responsibility is to remain in the vine. To remain in Jesus. There's one final I am that I want to just focus on as we close. And it's perhaps a little bit different. It's not one that we would perhaps anticipate. It comes in the context of Jesus being arrested. In John chapter 18, verse 4, Jesus, knowing all that was going to happen to him, went out and asked them, "Who is it you want?" "Jesus of Nazareth," they replied. "I am he," Jesus said. And Judas the traitor was standing there with them. When Jesus said, "I am he," they drew back and fell to the ground. Again he asked them, "Who is it you want?" "Jesus of Nazareth," they said. Jesus answered, "I told you that I am he. If you are looking for me, then let these men go." Who are you looking for? Who are you looking for? Who is the one that you're looking for? The one who changes lives. The one who teaches revolutionary truth. The one who performs miracles. The one who touches the unlovable. The one who defeated sin and death and came back to life. Who is it you are looking for? Jesus says, "I am he." Did you notice how those who had come to arrest Jesus responded? Did you notice that? A bit ironic, really, isn't it? They came to arrest him. They came with their arms, with swords and clubs, and they came to arrest Jesus. And Jesus said three words to them. He said, "I am he." And these soldiers backed up and fell to the ground. Why? Because this man, Jesus, was not just a man. He was not just Jesus of Nazareth. He was the Son of God. He is the I Am. The Jesus who changed the world. The Jesus of the Bible. We can never know all about him. None of us. Don't know how long you've been a Christian. You will never know everything there is to know about Jesus. And every time you read the Bible, read the gospel accounts, if you come to it with an open heart and mind, you'll hear and receive something new. But this Jesus changes the world. But he can change your life and mine. I am he. Man and God, human and divine, the one who promises and the one who delivers. Who do you say he is? Look no further than Jesus.